Hello and welcome to episode 33.
Wobble, wobble, microphone. Oh, no,
sorry.
Wobble,
shall we try that again? Right. Hello and welcome to episode
33. I've got a sense of deja vu.
Yeah, I know. By the way, Alina, you don't need to edit that mess up. I don't know whether that came through on the microphone when I accidentally hit my microphone.
Thumped.
Went a bit wobbly.
Your microphone. You went a bit all wobbly. Did. Not you, the microphone.
I know. There we go. I'm going to place it there. So
right.
Apologies.
Hands down.
Welcome to episode...
And I'm not doing
okay,
it
okay, fine. Episode 33. It's episode 33, everybody. How are we doing, sir? Mr. Andrew Reid from Resilient Business Systems in Darlington.
I am very well, Mr. Adam Walker.
I was going to say.
I am very well, Mr. Adam Walker from HubSpoke Media. I have had my head deep into programming.
I haven't actually seen you this week.
Honestly, I've been tied up behind my little desk.
It's not a little desk.
It is a big desk.
By, your desk, though.
Yes.
So while I was away, they moved offices.
We did.
Yep. So you've gone into, it's great.
It's a great.
You've got room to throw computer parts around. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But they put Andy in a corner behind a screen where nobody can see him.
Or hear me.
Yeah.
You were very loud.
Yeah. Well, exactly. We did a survey, didn't we? And you were the loudest. So Andy's, when you walk in the room, Andy can't be seen because he's behind a big seat, a big screen in the corner, and neither can any of the team. Can Michelle even see you from where she's sat?
I have to lean over and sit and sort of like pop my head. Sorry, I have to lean over and pop my head right across.
So was that Michelle's choosing to put you there?
Basically, I tend to wander when I'm on the phone.
Yeah, you do.
I think better, and I am apparently quite loud on the phone. I have yet to have proof of that. But
I can provide a witness statement.
Yeah, exactly. But if you notice, I'm at the far end of the office now, where even if I walk to the window and back, I'm still at the far end of the room, out of the way of everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus the screen's up there, to when I am sat down doing a Teams call, my voice bounces back at me.
Yeah.
And it doesn't disturb the rest of the guys. But no, it's a fabulous office. Your good ladies, Jess and Alina, while you were on holiday, provided some awesome photographs.
I know, it looks great,
really
doesn't it?
Good,
no,
doesn't
it's great.
It?
No, nice it's move. Really nice move. So,
absolutely.
Do you know what? I cannot get my glasses clean today.
No, not can't really get them sorted.
It's one of those, sorry.
Anyway, 5 o'clock this morning, my friend,
yeah.
I went, oh my goodness me, I've got an idea for the podcast.
Go on.
And then. You have in your hand a piece of paper.
It was on the table, but I've got it in my hand now. Do you know what, Mr. Reid? You once again have outdone yourself.
I know.
Because, I'll be honest, I've never brought anything printed off to the podcast. I've had notes on my phone or iPad that you, sir, got the effort of printing. Not one.
Not one.
But two. And don't worry, people, the paper will be recycled at the end.
It will be recycled at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking is, very funnily enough, you know, last week you geeked out, didn't you?
Yes, I need to apologise to everybody.
No, I loved it, mate.
Yeah, well, look, I think sometimes you've just got to let it out. And a good friend of mine said, you lost me on the Linux. Like, but he's Windows through and through, and he doesn't like Linux.
Okay.
But we did geek out. We did.
Yeah.
And I just needed to get it out of my system.
No,
it was like a culmination of probably 8 months worth of podcasting.
Yeah, all building
this,
up.
All building up, and I'm like, I need to implement.
You need to burst it out.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it got me thinking, mate. It got me thinking in terms of how old I'm 50-something. How old are you?
21.
21, right, okay.
Yep.
So obviously, just 2 seconds.
Mate,
we've got to lie
if
on
you say it with confidence.
Right, okay.
It's good.
It's good, okay. Yeah. I'm 50.
Sorry, I'm 23.
Okay, 23. But what it made me think of is that you and me have been in business for quite a while now.
You, yep.
As in our own business.
Coming up 8 years next month.
Coming up 8 years. We're going into our 19th year, whatever it is, 20 odd years.
Wow.
I started in 2005.
So YouTube didn't even exist.
No, YouTube didn't.
you were running an IT business before YouTube. That's brilliant.
But we both worked in businesses prior to that. And I wanted to catch you. I wanted to make sure that you understood. And the episode title that I've got today is How Has Technology Transformed Business? So when you first ever started your job, what was it? What was your first job?
My first job was a pot washer.
Okay, not much technology involved.
Actually, there was.
That.
There was a dishwasher.
Wow.
Well, you know, so you had a dishwasher, but you spent a lot of the time, obviously, in the sink cleaning the pans.
Right. Okay,
but then I worked bar.
Okay, so technology there.
Yeah, it was a till system.
Was it EPOS?
No, it was like
was it Wi-Fi?
It was like the, no, it was like the, keep going. It was like the big calculator things.
Was it like?
Bing, bing, I don't even know what they call those.
Just, no, cash register.
Yeah,
yeah. Was it one of those ones where it was like Ronnie Barker, where the till?
Yeah, and then all hours. Very quickly that got upgraded to a. I don't know. So it was, this is your beer, this is your Coke button, this is right. Your... But it's a physical button, not a digital screen.
Not a digital with screen.
It. Yeah. So you had the till all set up, they obviously set all the pricing, and then, you know, you'd have to write all your own buttons on.
Yes, exactly.
In terrible in terrible handwriting. It's not because the person had bad handwriting, it's just the buttons were so small to fit the writing in. So then that was that.
Goodness me. But that was still draw, cash, count up, tally at the end of the night.
Yeah. And and then when you got to take payment, not only just cash, card, whatever, but the card.
Yes.
It wasn't tappy-tappy, wavy-wavy. In New Zealand, it's called PayWave. By the way, we do contactless.
Right.
Contactless, as Rob kindly laughs at.
Yeah.
Like, contactless. He says it like that. But they use PayWave. But there's none of that. It was the
the chunk chunk
the
machine.
carbon what copy. What on earth was that called? We need to find that out. But it was you put the card on the plate. For people who don't know, it's about half the size of a sheet of A4.
Yeah,
and you'd put it down. You put the card in a certain place. You'd put a carbon copy piece of paper, duplicate paper, and you would pull. The slider, I think you're looking over it now. Yeah. You'd pull the slider across it, which had a roller that would then imprint the card into the carbon copy, and then you'd get them to sign it, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And then that was done. It was the big chink chink sound that you made.
Because as you run over the card.
Loads of different pieces of carbon paper. You had to, like there was three copies, wasn't there? Something like your top copy.
One for the customer, one for the, I don't know. Anyway, but there was that. And then, I think one was to send off to the bank, probably.
Absolutely.
One to keep, one to send off to the bank. So the reason why, if you're unaware, you know, have you ever looked at the bank card? Have you noticed they started doing the flat numbers? As in, the flat numbers don't stick out of the card. The numbers don't stick out. Originally, they used to stick out, so you could do chunk, chunk over it. Have you got some detail? There it is. Yeah, it was just like that.
Yeah, it's called. All it's basically called is a credit card imprinter.
Credit card imprinter. Yeah.
I'm just reading that. Or, colloquially known as a zip-zap machine.
A zip-zap? Oh, I like a zip-zap.
A click-clack machine.
Click-clack, okay, yeah.
I like the best one. Or a knuckle-buster.
A knuckle-buster, I did that, I did that, absolutely. I accidentally also trapped my finger in it once. I had my finger sort of spilling into the plate area.
And then I went crushed it.
Straight onto my finger. But
you also take checks?
We did.
Wow.
We did. I mean, you'd take a check. And by the way, this is not... Well, I'm going to say it's not very long ago. Other people might disagree. What was it? Early 2000s.
Yeah, it must be. But yeah.
Yeah? Early 2000s. So what, 2001?
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah. Possibly.
And we were going clunk, clunk.
Wow.
So that was the technology I had. I mean, I think there were maybe a bit on the... slower end of the curve in terms of embracing the technology and doing it.
But back then, just cash and everything, you know, you didn't need anything else. It was just like, I have cash, I have a check, I have a checkbook.
Yep,
you know,
exactly.
Your card wasn't tap-tap, it was click-clack.
It was click-clack, yeah, exactly. So, that was the first sort of workplace technology. However, when I was 15, I did do a work placement.
Oh, where at?
It was Cleveland Bridge, actually, of all places.
Just down the road?
Yeah.
How spooky is
so
that?
So I went there... and they gave me a massive folder for data entry.
Yeah.
And they were like, can you put this in? And it needs to like tot up this, that, and the other. But I used Excel and made some equation-y things,
formulas.
That's it, formulas. Yeah. And all I had to do was put in three fields. Because I was like, well, actually, this all makes sense if you just get it to do X, Y, and Z.
Clever clogs.
Yes, so I did all that. And by the end of, after a day and a half, I went, it's finished. And we're like, I thought that was going to keep you busy all week. And it's because I
automated
the calculation thing. So I didn't have to do that. So then I got to work on some cool other bits and bobs while I was there. Yeah. So that was the first sort of workplace using a computer.
Right, okay. Yeah. Well, we're jumping ever so slightly, so, you know, I don't mind that because you're heading down memory lane. But going back to your first job again, how was communication? How did people get in contact with the business?
Oh, telephones.
Absolutely.
Yeah, telephone in bookings. We had a central book for all the bookings.
Oh, again, so it was all manual writing down?
Yeah, manual writing down, so you had to be at the phone with the book.
Yes.
And sometimes, obviously, the owners of the place lived in there, so they were upstairs. Yeah. So sometimes they'd ring, we'd be doing kitchen prep, and the phone would ring, and it'd be like, the book's upstairs, you know, sort of thing. So they'd have to run upstairs, grab the book. Yeah, so that book was so, so precious in terms of getting all that. Yeah.
Wow, that's really good. That's
really so you clever. Booked that, and then obviously there'd be walk-ins as well. But it was a very popular restaurant, so it was...
I mean, I know I still see some restaurants today do, you know, they do write it down and take it back because that's great, that, you know, that's what it is. But again, what I'm trying to do is, in, you know, going back to the theme, technology transforming business. Back then, it was be careful. If you spill that coffee all over.
I'm taking my lid off my travel mug.
Yeah, watch it.
It keeps it too hot for me.
Yeah, this is ridiculously hot.
It's like, how hard can I pull the lid open without...
Splashing, ooh, there we go.
Throwing it everywhere, there we go.
Throw it everywhere.
Sorry, carry on.
So yeah, I mean, I still see some restaurants taking bookings by the book nowadays, and that's quite nice, stuff like that. But nowadays, what I'm thinking of, or what I'm trying to get the theme was, you couldn't do things by paper nowadays. You couldn't have a raft of people on the telephone just taking calls.
Tippex.
Oh,
absolutely. It was a wonderful technology to use.
It was.
In that book.
Yeah,
because you'd have cancellations, so you'd have to
tip out.
You'd be like, and then you're like, the phone would ring, and you're like, I can't, and they'd take that slot, and you're like, I can't, I've got to wait for it to dry.
Technology-wise,
yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But then, I suppose I started my first real job, I think, at a place called Silic Mouldings Limited.
Okay.
Shout out to all my friends of Silic. None of them are listening to this, but hey, I always say that. It makes a difference. But I started in the warehouse, you know, manual labour, in fact. And I remember them installing the first fax.
Oh, fax. Where are the fax at home?
Did you read?
Yeah, we did. I never really know why we got it, because I can only remember receiving like two fax.
Yeah.
And that was because my dad had rung them and going, send us a fax.
Send us a fax.
I think it only came in useful. Sometimes you had to send bank documents and you can send it via fax.
Yeah, absolutely. We've still got a customer that, I won't mention the bank's name, but they're still receiving information by fax.
Alina, I need to just consult. Do you know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about a fax? No.
There you go.
Okay, so for our younger listeners, please explain what a fax machine is.
So a fax is basically, think of it as a printer, okay? And you would put, you know, like when you're scanning today, you put the piece of paper face down into the machine, okay? This was a printer on a slight angle, so gravity would let you pull the piece of paper through. And what you'd do is you'd put the piece of paper in, you would dial the fax number of the other company.
Yep.
It would make a horrible, horrendous whistling sound. Fax machine at the other end would acknowledge, handshake, and go, send me the piece of paper.
Yeah.
And then you'd slowly see this piece of paper going, duk, 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 duk,
yeah, it was. Duk.
And what the machine did was effectively converted and scan the piece of paper in, converting into digital signals, which went wee all the way down to the other end, and on that horrible carbon copy.
Yeah, paper, I was going to say, it was the thin stuff.
Horrible, the thin, awful stuff. It basically replicated what you'd done.
Yeah, so Alina, while his end of the paper would be going in, my end of the paper would be going out, and it would be basically printing what was on his piece of paper.
Yeah.
But if you picked up the phone...
Yes.
It broke it. It didn't... Yeah.
Yes, the early days, don't lift up that. Resend that number again.
You'd have to ring them again.
Restart that again.
Someone picked up the
phone. Or when the paper jammed, or when the roll ran out. Ah, absolute nightmare. But yeah, that was
the
first
technology.
And
then you'd always go to tear it off the machine because it would come off a roll. And when you'd tear it on that feebly rubbish paper, you'd rip it and it would like rip halfway through the middle of your document.
Yeah, and then your boss would go, why is it ripped?
We don't miss the fax machine, but people are still using it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There we go.
I also remember when a customer wanted to keep his fax machine and nobody did it anymore. I Googled, this is when the internet was around, and somebody had created a fax to email service. So there was a machine somewhere that converted the fax, scanned it and sent it actually as an email.
Do you know, I want to ferret through our lofts.
I bet you'll find
my old, because my house used to be Mum and Dad's house.
Yes, of course.
So it might be in there somewhere.
It might be in there, yeah.
Or it might be in theirs. I wouldn't be surprised. My dad loves to hang on to things.
So before we go on to like latest things, like, again, data management. So back in Cleveland Bridge, and you were talking about there, think about the amount of paper that was stored.
Well, I just, the file came over and went, we need this on the computer.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it was on networks or whatever they're doing. It probably was. But, God, you're triggering so many memories.
I thought so.
Like, I remembered being in my school that had a couple of sites.
Yeah.
And one was across town.
Right.
And I could print stuff off in the other schools. I managed to get through the network. Not that I was doing anything.
No.
Untoward.
But back in Silic Moulding days, we had the huge, huge green on white paper. You know, the big A3. I used to get boxes every other month. I used to like hump these boxes from the warehouse into the printer room, load up the paper, because I had to print off stock reports, I had to print off inventory reports, I had to print off yesterday's purchase order summary. So my job first thing in the morning, this machine was just like rattling away.
Here's a question. So you're printing off. Obviously they're on a digital database.
We had something called an AS400, which was a huge computer. I think we were one of the first in the Northeast to get one. We had to bring this computer in, and I'm not kidding, man, it was probably about the size of that black cabinet behind you terms of height.
Yeah.
And probably, if I turn it that way, it was
massive square.
Huge. We had to put it into the computer room. We had to put it into an empty space and build the computer room around it. It was that big.
So it
was huge.
The question I had is, because you had to print all these things out.
Yeah.
So obviously, they didn't just go, right, the computer's the central record and we'll just look on the screen.
No, because people back then were so used to having things in front of them and going out. So we had an AS400, as I said. It was a green on black system.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't think, no GUI. There was nothing like a GUI. Graphical user interface.
I was going to say something then, and I couldn't remember. Graphical.
What were you going to say?
I was like, my brain's not working.
But then, we used to print off. So my job first thing in the morning for the first hour was to sit, checking all the backup jobs had run, checking this, checking that, while this humongous machine just rattled out these reports. Very noisy.
Mm.
I'd rip them off.
Was it a 16-pin printer with the... Oh, see, again, you triggered it. A 16-pin printer, which would go...
Dot matrixy type thing.
That was it.
It had a huge ribbon, you know, like this about this big.
Right,
so
okay.
A huge ribbon. So I had to tear them off, and then obviously it was lovely folded green paper.
Did it have the holes on either side for the reels?
Because people had absolute massive file lever arch files. You know what a lever arch file is. Back in those days, we had A3 lever arch files because you had to store the print reports. And every day the guy would get off, and I remember taking it to Peter, and he would have his stock report, and he'd give, you know, and he'd go, right, so last week we had 10,000 parts in stock, this week we've got this part. And then he'd manually tally up everything, because again, didn't have such things. It was whatever the software did was whatever you had, yeah? So I'll go on a little bit later on of how I develop reports. But what I'm getting at is how much paper. They were just, and we had cupboards. Remember the big massive metal filing cupboards? And you'd open them up and it would be like, stock, 1981. Stock, year end, 1982.
Yeah.
And they're just like, honestly, you built your muscles up carting these things around. I mean, you must have seen that at the end of in your pub days. How much of the receipts?
Oh, receipts, all of that. Yeah, like you'd go, right, that's service done for tonight. And you'd have all those carbon copies, you'd have the receipts, you'd have the order slips, and you'd be popping it all together.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in case it got... Because it wasn't the food stuff. In fact, the food was tallied up on the check sheets.
Yes.
That you took, do you know, when you come to your table, what would you like? Pizza and the right pizz.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like burger.
Yeah. You know. You have to do quick.
Yeah. So they'd like, you'd have all those shorthand waiter notes, which would then be tallied up, I remember. Yeah. And we had one person responsible for tallying it up, making sure it's correct.
Yeah. Okay, the next on my list was supplier chain management. So again, looking at Alina, what's supplier chain management? Blank look. But back in my days, about the S400, if you think about it, this was back in the early days of automotive industry. Yeah?
Yep.
All of these cars on the line.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but literally, you'd reach into a box and go, where's the next part? Yeah, because over in the warehouse somewhere was the delivery, the parts getting delivered.
Yep.
And I was probably, I remember working for...
He's smiling.
How did you know? You weren't even looking.
I'm reading.
All right, okay.
Yeah, but I know you are. Looking, she stood at that camera and you stopped talking. I know what's going on.
I'm just so predictable.
Yes, you are.
Exactly. But I was back in the days of a company called UKNSI and then built... manufacturing automotive parts.
Okay.
And my company and another company, we were probably, again, just on the verge of what they called JIT, just in time.
Oh, yes.
So the whole idea of this is you didn't have massive amounts of stock in the warehouse because obviously you had to pay for it. It would, it could go...
Takes up space.
Yep. Not that it would go off in the car industry, but this whole thing. But this company, UKNSI, wanted to reduce their warehouse footprint. So basically, they started talking to all the people, and this is just when information was starting to get onto the superhighway. And the idea being is that you would look in the box and you go, I've only got 100 left. But literally, that day was being delivered another 100. So you never had, and that's the minimum maximum stop came in. So if I have 100 in stock, I don't need any more.
Yeah.
If I have, and we have a minimum stock, once I get below, and I remember talking to this gentleman there, and the whole idea was that how low could you make the minimum stock go? Obviously, you'd need some for emergencies, but the whole idea was you were going, oh my God, I've only got five. Oh, there's a delivery of 100. So did you experience anything like that?
I suppose with beverage deliveries, supplies and things, and then you'd have the order sheet and the carbon copy of those.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that would have to be signed for and go in. And you still have to sign for them nowadays, actually, note. But that was all done manually. So it'd be like, right, what do we need on the order?
Yes.
Physically look.
Yeah.
This is what we need. And obviously you'd know roughly what you need each week. And especially in food, like food goes off. So you need to make sure that you're doing that. So it was reliant on being eyeballed, shall we say, rather than looking at a database automatically goes, hey, you need X, Y, and Z.
Well, that brings me to an interesting question then. So you worked in the kitchen of the pub, but then did you end up, like you said, you were second
job. I did waiting.
You did waiting, right.
Yeah, I did all sorts.
So along that was you delivered and served drinks.
Yep.
Okay, then. Not so much that you could do back then, and you were saying about eyeballing, which is what triggered the thought. Would you say, Baby Sham's popular this week? This is popular this week. So there's no such thing as analytics. Was it down to literally you going, what's been a good seller this week?
Yeah, there was kind of that going on. Obviously, at that point, I was never responsible for stuff, but you might be like going, here's what we're doing. But the trend thing didn't really exist. It was like the people would, it was a country pub.
Right.
So people would often come in on every Friday or every Sunday or every Saturday, and they'd have the same pint. There's a chap who used to come in every time, and he'd have half pint of lemonade. I'm like, why don't you just get a pint of lemonade?
Yeah.
You know, but that's what he did.
Yeah.
There's some people that would be, you know, half pint of bitter.
Yeah, of
course. And that's what they want, you know, and they'd have that, and away they went. Happy days. So people were very... And maybe because of the lack of social media and stuff like that, there wasn't like external influence of going, I'll try this.
Yeah.
The head chef that we had there, she was incredible. And she would do the most amazing food, sea bass and all this sort of stuff. It was absolutely
already.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was really good. So naturally her menu was very interesting.
Yeah.
So people would like it, and they'd actually come for something a bit different as well.
Yeah.
And she did a great classic Sunday roast. you know, and all of that. It's just all really, really well done. So, yeah, in terms of the trend thing, it was all done on feel, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, so you might go, we're doing more. I suppose the example is when, you know, Prosecco started coming more into trend and people would be going, can I have a glass of Prosecco? At first, there's very few people asking for that. And then all of a sudden, everyone wanted it. And then there was rosé. Everyone wanted some rosé. And, you know, it's the summer. I'll have some rosé. So, yeah, there's an element of that. But it's not like probably what it is now.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
You go into a gin bar and there's like all of these different type of gins and all these different combinations. But we might have an Easter combination, say.
Correct.
Yeah. So it wasn't the same in that sense. But you'd be very much going off feel. And you couldn't monitor, oh, we're selling more this. You'd have to physically go, I'd see it. You'd have to see it and do that.
You see, I could just see in your mind, you're back in those days,
aren't
you?
Yeah, you would be. You'd be doing it. Like,
what was doing it and how you were doing it? And
yeah, but it was really kind of not one of those things you really thought about.
No.
You just sort of, it was just in your way of working. Yeah, exactly. So you're just like, right, we're going nuts. Pims was the one where we had a summer where everyone just wanted Pims.
Yeah.
And it was like, we'd done, I think, a Pims the year before, and then everyone's going, Pims, please.
Pims,
you know, because obviously there's a good advertising campaign on. So,
well, I'm going to come on to that, so that's interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, you'd see that go on, but you would only know pretty much when it was almost too late.
Yes.
Because you'd be like, well, we've got a bottle of Pims, because it keeps the shelf life and this, that, and the other, but actually, we'll probably only do one. And then suddenly you have someone go, can we have a jug of Pims, and you're like, okay, we've got not a bottle, got like half a bottle or whatever it is, you know. So you'd very quickly get to the point where you're like, right, we need more Pims, and then that would be a mercy dash potentially to the supermarket because you wouldn't have had time to get it onto the delivery. And there was lots of mercy dashes at the time at the supermarket.
Well, that's another interesting point. Keep that thought, please, Adam.
Yep.
So when you were ordering anything for the country pub, whether it be your food, whether it be your beer or your alcohol, your spirits, I put down to one of the next points, business travel. Oh, excuse me. Did you have a representative of the drinks industry come out and see you?
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
there you go.
In fact, I'm thinking of a few pubs. We had multiple breweries that, and they provide, you know, you've got Heineken, for example, that serve, this is their drinks options, and you can sign up to the Heineken contract and you'll get all the soft drinks as well as the
beer.
It's not just the beer.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, Molson Coors and all this sort of stuff going on. So there's loads. Yeah, you'd have people coming in all the time.
And that's what I'm getting at. They would take their time. Their role was a salesman, or a saleswoman, or a representative. They would travel. They would come out and they would go, right, I'm coming to see Adam, 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
You would sit down in the corner of the pub, because I've witnessed this. And he would go through and go, right, what are you selling a lot of?
See, you've triggered this with the hotel I then subsequently worked at.
Ah, right.
And we had a wine cellar.
Nice. Right. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we'd, and when I say a wine cellar, I mean
literally
a wine cellar that you'd go down. So you'd have a wedding, for example, and we'd do big weddings.
Yeah.
And you would have Pims for arrival drinks, or it might be Bucks Fizz. Sometimes people would want that, or it might be Prosecco, or it might be champagne. So you'd have to pre-order that, but it's all done paper and make sure you're in the brewery and this, that, and the other. And then if it's Pims, it's like, has the chef ordered extra cucumber and ordered mint and ordered strawberries and all of that stuff?
So again, all manual thinking.
Yeah. So you had to literally go down, what's the sheet, right? I need to speak to them about that. I need to physically go and look that we've got enough bottles of this in for a rival drink, but then it depends on how many you've sold. Because suddenly it might, you know, let's say it was, Bucks Fizz, right?
Yeah.
Let's say it's Bucks Fizz rival. You might hold some Bucks Fizz in, just generally, and you probably wouldn't sell any.
Yep.
But then you could have a wedding that was coming in. You've ordered the 10 bottles that you need for the wedding. And then suddenly, you've ordered 9 bottles, thinking, well, we can use the other one, we're sorted. And then suddenly someone that week goes, I'll have a Bucks Fizz, please. And you're like, okay, I need an extra bottle of Bucks Fizz. And that's where the Mercy Dash again would come in.
Yeah, exactly.
So you try and anticipate it, but it was either... And with stock, what you're talking about, you would very easily sort of overrun that.
And that's what I'm saying about where I witnessed this gentleman. You know, I can't even remember. It was, you know, in the early days, me and a friend stuck in a pub. We were doing some heavy work somewhere. I was helping him out. And we ended up going to the pub for dinner. But the representative, I remember overhearing him, and the owner of the bar was like, so what have I sold this month? because he had no clue.
Yeah.
Because obviously he only ever ordered from the brewery, and the guy came with this massive book, you know, and he went, right, just 2 seconds. Yeah. He would literally thumb through the whole papers, find the pub, and you could, and I'm going to move my coffee out of the way.
Here. Yeah, yeah.
Apologies. But when he opened the book, I'm not kidding, and it was like, you know, because it was so big. And
I remember that. Yeah. I remember that.
Let's say it was at Adam's pub. He went, right, Adam, this month you've had and ordered 5 bottles of Buck's Fizz. And you would do this and you do this. And then he would get his book out and he would look and go, right, well, I've got a party of 5 coming in. Oh, that guy always drinks Buck's Fizz. And that's what I'm getting at. There was no computer.
It was so reliant. Literally, and then imagine the person who's... Because I wasn't the bar manager.
No, no.
However, I supported the orders because when does a day off fall? When does the rep come in?
You can't do it in the entertainment.
And how can one person just maintain
all
of that? So there was like three of us that would be running the bar cellar.
Yeah.
So obviously the manager. But in terms of he'd be choosing that, we'd be doing all the line cleaning, have I got enough line cleaner, for example,
sort
of stuff. And then you'd be going, how many kegs of beer have we got? How much do we need? What's the shelf life on the kegs of beer?
Absolutely.
Thinking about it now, and I've never thought about this, it's actually a nightmare.
Yes, it was.
To manage and stay on top of.
Yeah, because you never, ever knew how, why, what. There was no, as you said, no trending. And this, I mean, I'm going to skip my other one that you can see then. I'm going to move
on to
the end.
You'd get some weddings that would come in. We would serve Guinness.
Wow. Right?
So, and we had the Guinness people come in and do, this is how you need to pour your pint of Guinness and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
So we did all of that. But let's say it was a wedding party and the stag party went to Ireland. And they drank Guinness on the thing.
Yes.
So they'd come in, they'd go, Guinness, please. So you'd be like, 8 Guinness. And you're like, okay, I'll be 40 minutes.
Mercy Dash.
Yeah. No, just for the pouring.
All right.
And then,
course.
And yeah, so we would have Guinness in and we'd have, you know, say a couple of kegs in or whatever. But they're then going to drink Guinness for the rest of the night. They'd drink you out of Guinness and then you're going into your next week going, our delivery doesn't come until the end.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So they were back to the whole thing. There wasn't anything like gist or logistics. You were literally, and I remember the guy, me and my friend, John, we were thinking about that. We got onto the topic and we were basically saying the feel of the pub, the owner of the pub. And again, I'm not trying to dissuade from what people are doing today, but pubs nowadays, you tend to get people, the brewery going, Adam, can you run the pub? You do it for a few months or, you know, whatever, and then you think, yeah, fine, it's not for me.
Yep.
Back then, you had somebody that was in the family. You had the feel of the pub. You knew the locals. You, as you were saying, I always had a guy coming.
Well, basically, when this chap would walk in, you'd either put, you know, if it's the bitter guy, you'd go, you'd just put it on the bar.
Absolutely. Like, no, but absolutely.
Evening, there you go. Like, you'd just do it.
Yeah.
But actually, they're quite like that as well.
Oh, they did. There's a great story that I've got. I spent 9 years up in Edinburgh and through contracting through BT. And I did quite a lot of staying over hotel. I mean, 4 days a week. Bless poor Michelle. Well, I think she loved it, really.
Probably.
Just me out of her life for 4 days a week.
Yeah.
But I ended up staying at the Caledonian Hotel.
Right.
It was a very posh restaurant, but BT had managed to wangle like a fabulous deal.
Wow.
You know, like really sort of like a fabulous deal. And obviously I accrued a lot of Hilton points, which meant I kept getting upgraded and. So I led a very, very good life. However, I used to drink Budweiser.
Okay.
And I always used to go to the bar and the key is with the Caledonian staff, they all had to be very respectful. It's like, good morning, sir, or good evening, sir. And I'd be like, look, I've been staying here for quite a number of years now. Can we drop the sir bit? And they're like, well, they could, but they weren't allowed to sort of like
Andy. Just do it.
It was just like Mr. Reed now. So at least I was like, you know, Mr. Reed.
Yeah.
I used to walk in, you know, and it's just like usual Mr. Reed. Yeah, it's a bottle of Budweiser. And the story I'm getting to is that there was a BT guy that came along for this particular project that we were running. He was quite a highfalutin guy, you know. I
mean,
everybody respectfully like, wow, you know, this guy's coming down. And we'd all arranged to go to the Caledonian pub and start there, you know, the inbuilt bar, and then go on to a restaurant. And I just remember that everybody was crowded around this guy, and they were all like, because he was a very good, lovely guy. Mm. But they were like, oh, let me get you a drink, whatever like that. And they were racking up the whole drinks. I'd come in about 15, 20 minutes later, you know, so it was all there. And I was just literally walking into the bar, and everybody was like focused on this big BT guy, and they were all serving him drinks and like, yes, what can I get you? What can I get you? And I just remember the guy behind the bar, Dave, lovely guy, clocking me. Yeah?
Yeah.
And he just nodded. And then I just walked up to the bar, and obviously I must have been like 10th in line. And then just while he was serving everything else, a bottle of beer came out, a bottle of Bud Light came out. Yeah. And the guy, the big BT guy, just went, sorry, how does he get served before everybody else? You know, and it was a bit of a laugh. He wasn't like, he was just hang on a minute. Why is he?
Because he knows.
But going back to what you were saying, that lovely feel, and he said, oh, bloody hell, Mr. Reed's been here for like 5 years.
It also presented with you a problem, though.
Yes.
Because, let's say the chap in the pub, we suddenly want to take that bitter off that I used as an example.
Yeah.
You then got a dilemma.
Oh,
if you really think about it,
for the one guy that drinks,
for the one, or the couple, some people would have it. But this chap is a local.
Yeah,
he comes in. That's the only thing he has.
Yeah,
and you are then in the position where you're going, or we need to change brewery, or because of cost. So you'd then have to sort of manage that. So what we'd do if we had to change is we'd try and find an alternative that would be similar.
Yes.
You know, and do it, and then talk to him.
Yes.
That comes back to the communication.
Yes.
Not just he walks in on the Tuesday and you're like, what do you want? You know, you can.
My usual.
And he's like, my usual. We don't have it.
Don't have it.
Since when? 12 o'clock today. You know, so like, it was really, it's nice. And there's still people that have the same thing and this, that, and the other, but sometimes you got to change. But yeah, it equally gave you a problem sometimes.
Of course it would.
But you need to look after people.
Okay, so one of my other... And this one, Adam, I left at the bottom because I almost thought of you this morning.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm just going to wind Adam up and let him go. What I want you to do, apart from the innovation one,
yep.
Read out the bottom one and then go up all of the other points in reverse order. Think about every story that you've told me, but apply what has that done to that role.
So it's marketing and advertising, digital and social media.
So now go back.
Yeah.
How has it affected?
Oh, I mean, just from a social perspective, the trends in general. We did a video this week.
Oh, wow, did you?
I'll have to show you. There's a trend going around where you take a clip of like a fail. We did Twin. By the way, that's out on TikTok and Insta, so have a look. But there's an example.
Yeah.
So me and Andy were miming singing to each other after the podcast last week.
Horrendous.
And it was terrible.
Can't sing for toffee.
Yeah, but there's an example.
Yes.
Social things going on. We want something lighthearted.
Yeah.
And therefore we're doing it. It's a trend.
Yeah.
Gin has been a huge trend and success and made its comeback quite a while ago
absolutely,
now.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it used to be, like I do remember, early 2000s, someone got gin and tonic.
And
they were like,
what? What? Yeah,
and don't mean this, they were like, are you an old person?
But it wasn't trendy back then.
It was seen as like a drink from the past.
Yes, it was.
I think it's the way to do that. But then with the social media and it coming around and this, that, and the other, have you tried pink gin? Have you tried, all this sort of stuff? People then start going, oh, I'll do that. And then it sort of builds. People are putting pictures on in bars of their drinks socially and showing. So it starts sort of, you know, different drinks and things like that. It starts showing it. The other example people do, and I don't condone drinking to excess. Please drink responsibly. But is it splitting the G on Guinness? What is it splitting the... I need to get that right. I saw it the other day. Someone posted it. It's where you got a drink to the Guinness, the G.
All right, okay.
Halfway down the G or something, or the full G. Someone's going to hit me out on TikTok. Please don't cut this into a reel because I'll get smashed.
Yeah.
So not... with the alcohol, just abused. Someone posted that there. So then I've seen that. It's in my head. I saw this. It's in my head. And I'm like, I quite fancy a Guinness.
Yeah.
So that's how it would change purchasing behaviours and this, that, and the other. Equally, you could have a similar approach with food.
Yes.
Yeah, we take how many pictures of food? Oh, not just me and you, but I mean like everybody, yeah, everyone does it. Does. And you go, might give that a go.
I fancy that. Oh, that's nice. I'll give that a go.
You know, so those things came about. For example, Yorkshire pudding wrap.
Yes.
Right, pops in my head. Never thought of having one. And then the first thing I knew about it is I saw it on social media.
Right.
So when I walked past the Yorkshire pudding wrap place, I'd be like, might try that.
Might try one of them.
Do you see what I mean? Yeah, so definitely. That sort of thing. And also, it can bring people into your restaurant.
Yes, 100%.
Okay. Yeah, so for example, Tower Street Food, for example, opened up in town. I haven't been yet. No, I really want to go. And the reason why I want to go is because I've seen how good their food looks on social media.
Have you seen the photographs of that restaurant in Darlington? What's it called? Babbles?
Babbles, yeah.
Have you seen their food?
I was there with you.
Yeah.
Yes. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah. And we had a breakfast naan, which, by the way, highly recommended.
Oh, my. I need one now. Alina, can you order? Can you get it delivered before the end of this podcast?
Yeah. So that's how social media can open people's mind. It can actually bring people in as well, which means increased demand. But with all the till systems, and we had Josh in from Use as a perfect example.
Hey, Use guys.
Hey, Use guys. Yeah, terrible, terrible. Yeah, terrible. Hi, Josh. But Josh came in and they do the point of sale, they do card readers, they do all this.
And do they have little buttons with tiny little writing?
No, they have digital buttons with digital screens and you can tap away and it can give you live
reporting. You can't do click-clack?
No click-clack, tip-tap. Pay wave, contactless.
Pay wave.
Yeah, so you can do that, but also Josh can go, like, they can get the live reporting. So they can be there, they can log in and look at it. Yeah. So they can see any given shift time, any time of day. They could go, how many gins did we serve last night, for example?
And that's incredible if you think about it, the actual analytics that allows you to go, what did we do yesterday? Never mind this month, back to my guy with a book. What did we do yesterday? Yep. And with all of the just-in-time things, he can look and go, we had a load of lads in last night, back from the pub. They loved Guinness. We're running London. It's just a tap of a button now.
Yep.
Tap of a button.
And I'm sure you could probably have a prompt that pops up. Do you need more Guinness?
Well, again, that's minimum maximum stock level.
Exactly.
It knows you're running out of stock. And I do know of another particular company, and we'll go back to my guy of supply chain management, the automotive guy. He's now, you remember I was saying, I've only got 5 left. There's another order in coming in for 100. That's not somebody manually going. Nowadays, it is, I know what the stock level is.
Yep.
I know what the lead time is. I've automatically raised it because I've got a trusted partner on the other end, and that it's all done seamlessly.
I think
communication-wise, it's incredible.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to say is the marketing media space, like Just Eat, for example, or Uber Eats, or any of or Deliveroo, or any of the food couriers. Yeah, exactly. Any of the couriers that changed the game, and people might not fully realize how much it changed. Basically, it allowed people that weren't doing takeaways
just to
do takeaways. And Josh equally has with Use, there's online ordering and stuff like that. So he can also go, well, actually, we can bolt on the online ordering with your thing and you can offer a takeaway.
Am I right in thinking that trend boom was due to COVID because nobody could go out?
Yeah, I mean, it increased, but
it
was already there, but more people were definitely jumping.
Our local Indian never do takeaways, and now all of a sudden, takeaways.
They're aware. So it might have moved from, say, having a telephone and ordering.
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing. Like, they might do a takeaway, but actually they've got a telephone, which means you've got a restaurant with a phone ringing constantly.
Yes.
Which is fine. Like, I know if they're doing that, but now companies, you know, moving on, are then offered a way of doing online orders. And then all the data manages itself. You got your data management there. It just does it. So when someone presses the button to buy something, there's no big printing job that you've had to do to go, what's our stock?
Nope.
You can call upon it any light. And then communication-wise, well, you can have a database of customers.
Yeah.
And then let's say you're going to go, what's trending? You could then email them and tell them what's trending and go, for Easter, we're going to do Easter egg hot chocolate.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something. You know, and you can then sort of directly communicate. Whereas if I think back to the restaurant, I mean, it's amazing to actually think like this before I was marketing, I was growing up, and it was like, they were busy all the time.
Yes.
What was the outward comms going on. You know, probably non-existent, really, other than when you've got people there speaking physically there. Advertisement-wise, I don't think, you know, it's built on reputation, and that's so important.
We were talking about that the other
day. But there were periods where you'd have a quieter evening, for example. So you could then do a meal offer if you wanted to, and say, hey, I've got this meal offer on, and
back in those days, Adam, how would you tell people?
Oh, you'd have to telephone them. You'd have to go through your booking list because you took the telephone number.
Yeah,
you'd have to rely on them to be at home, and then you'd have to ring them, which would have been very odd to do back then. To go, hello, this is the pub down the road. We've got a special offer on 10% off. It just didn't happen.
Or the big sign outside the morning.
Yeah, sandwich board.
Yeah.
That's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, sandwich board. Or the guy walking up and down the street with a sandwich
board. Yeah, flyers, all that sort of, you know, for more urban environments, you know,
you
might have flyers and stuff.
What would you do? You'd literally put it on
social media. Paid at it, do whatever you want. Or you could email all the customers that you got engaged and signed up with
talking about that, funnily enough, I had a chat with a customer who was doing their website, and he asked me, should I have a message me now WhatsApp button on the website?
Do you really want to message me now?
Well, that's the only thing that I was saying to this particular customer. I'm like, are you literally going to be there every second of the day waiting for that WhatsApp message? And he went, no, not really. I'm like, yeah, then. I mean, the benefits, you know, it says to the world out there.
It works if it was open during opening hours, perhaps, depending on the work.
Yeah.
But then I'm aware when you get into jobs, like I said before I went on holiday, I was shutting the door on my life while I just focus on this single task. And we had it this week. At one point, Jess just went to me, one task at a time, Adam. And it was as the phone was ringing, my email was pinging, my Teams was going. I think it was you, actually. Teams was going. I had someone hitting me up on LinkedIn. Someone was phoning my mobile, all in the space of about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the whole time my email's going ping, 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 ping. So, you know, I think WhatsApp, if that's a service you can offer, it can be really good.
It can be.
But you've equally got to think about what you're trying to do during the day when they're doing that. And if you've got, say, a booking system, are people just going to circumnavigate the booking system to go, can you book me in at 7?
Yes, exactly.
And it's like, you need to think about your process, in my opinion.
Let's say we decided not to do the WhatsApp.
Yeah, I can see why.
You can see why.
I can see why.
Exactly. So,
mate, hang on.
Oh, I am. I've seen that. I've done it below.
Yeah, so that's half the page.
Yes.
So this bit, I've been looking and eyeballing. I'm going to read the title.
Okay, go for it.
Historical
Can you speak today?
Yeah. Historical milestones in computing history.
And these are my pick of them.
Your pick of them.
Yeah.
I am so interested, right?
Yeah.
This is what, right, hit me. Let's go.
Okay, so basically what I thought was, for the listeners out there, how my brain works. based upon the conversation we had last week, I'm like, oh, I know what I can do with Adam. How has technology transformed your business? That got me to thinking, where would you meet? Well, it's easy. Here's an easy question, Adam. If we hadn't migrated and moved forward with technology, where would we be today not doing this podcast?
I think, do you know what? And by the way, I'm going to let Andy reveal the dates, but I'm looking at the dates going, oh, wow.
Yeah.
But then I'm thinking, in fact, I'm going to mention one date.
Okay.
You've got 1972 on there.
Oh, yes.
Right? But that's not the earliest date.
No.
And I'm thinking, how much has it changed since then?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Right.
I mean, absolutely.
So you've gone back way further, and you're going to go through this now, but if you just think back to 1972, the difference now, a flip phone. You can watch your TV on there. You can do whatever you want. You can video call me in New Zealand when I'm
That's exactly what we did, yeah.
So 1972, I think I said it in the podcast. I remember being on the phone to New Zealand. It sounded like you were talking through a drain pipe, and this was in the 90s. So the fact that you've got loads of dates here, I'm intrigued.
It got me thinking, my friend, about where would we be without computing? And I basically spent the last half hour, you know, when you go down that rabbit hole.
Yep.
And I was like, how did it all start?
It's quite the rabbit hole.
It's quite the rabbit hole.
It goes back a few hundred years.
Yeah. So again, these are my own choices. I've picked out the massive, you know, I went from Wikipedia to
Let us know in comments or anything if you've got any other dates to add to this as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that'd there was cool. loads. I mean, I could have gone on for hours and hours and hours, but I decided, you know, I randomly picked one that I particularly thought that were unique to me. So way back in 1642... in France,
yep.
a gentleman called Blaise Pascal builds the Pascal adding machine.
I'm Googling it. Right. What do you know about it?
As far as I'm aware, it was the predecessor or the actual abacus. How it calculates an adding machine. But remember that I was jumping all over.
Yeah.
If you're Googling it right now, pause as he Googles.
Oh, my word. It's a mechanical calculator.
It's the mechanical one. Right, I couldn't remember where I was. Like to say,
there we go.
It was the abacus, and then it came on, and he Pascal added one.
Look, so there's...
That's the one.
Yeah, so basically it's cogs, and I think you need to Google it.
Dials.
Cogs and dials with numbers in the top little gap where obviously the number rotates.
I think that was it. That led me, because I think I fell down the trap of what the calculator was, and I think it led me to that.
Yeah.
So the predecessor to the very first adding machine, calculator.
I thought they were selling one then. It's the biography about it.
What I'd like you to take into consideration, because I did this, Adam.
Yeah.
1642.
I know, that's insane.
That is, I was like blown away by, I'm like, that guy's built an adding machine
that
in
is really
1642.
Cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. So then...
Actually, just on that.
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming, might be wrongly assuming, but I'm assuming that education was obviously only accessible to the few. Which it will be
was,
because the Education Act wasn't in place then.
Absolutely.
So led to develop a calculator by laborious arithmetical...
Arithmetic.
I can't speak today. Calculations required by his father's work as a supervisor in taxes and ruin. Wow.
But that was to do with taxes back then. Think about your job, about what you were saying about the pub and the landlords and things like that. That was the guy who was adding up the taxes that the people of the town had to pay him. And he built a calculator adding machine in 1642.
I know, that is, you've really captured me with that one. That is brilliant.
Oh, I thought that as well.
So, obviously, all mechanical.
Yes.
How do you even design that?
The guy is a genius. I mean...
Honestly,
I did the same thing. I'm like, I'm writing that down. That is insane.
So it adds 1 to 9 on one dial and carries 1 to the next dial.
Yes, exactly.
So, like, when you go over, say it was 7 plus 4 and it's 11.
Carry the 1.
You would wind it on and it would add a 1 to
Correct.
The next. Jeez.
I was blown away with that.
And that's all mechanical.
Yeah.
After 50 prototypes, he presented the device to the public. 50.
How do you even think of something to
I don't know. Yeah, and the fact that it's all mechanical, physically working, but that is technology, that is computing.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah. That's what I was getting at.
Wow, love that one.
For me, 1679 in Germany, Gottfried Leibniz, forgive me if I pronounce that wrong, perfects the binary number system. The whole of the world computing is built on binaries.
Is it?
Zeros.
So,
it's
going to go zeros and ones.
Oh, can I tell my binary joke?
I probably won't get it, but go on then.
There's 3 types of people in this world. The binary. Never mind.
No, finish it off. Come on.
No,
there'll be people out there. I want to hear it.
I've forgotten it now.
There's noughts. There's ones. There's one. Right, okay.
That's the whole joke. There's only 3 types of people in the world. Yeah,
so binaries. I told you. Binary.
Yeah, anyway. But to me, for me in my computing land, without binary... We wouldn't have existed.
No.
So that's incredible. Now, you will have heard this of this gentleman. In 1833, in the UK, Mr. Charles Babbage has the idea for the analytical engine. And although he didn't actually build it, it builds the foundation for all modern computers. Augusta Ada Byron, a.k.a. Ada Lovelace, who worked with him, proposed using punch cards, which... Back in 1801, Joseph Jacquard invented it to make his loom industry more programmatical.
Ah, so Industrial Revolution type situation. Mate. That really brought things on in numerous ways. Also had a few issues going on, but you know, with child labour and this, that and the other. However,
but if you think about it, back in 1801, this gentleman invented the punch card.
That's cool.
That the machine would go along, realise there's a hole, and then go, I'll need to punch, or I'll need to draw the needle through. In 1801, Adam, this guy went, oh, I'll design something that automates everything for the loom industry.
That's insane.
Incredible, my friend. Jumping forward, because, and the reason I jumped, notice from 1833, I jumped to 1964, because I'll come to what I mentioned about the Moore's Law, but it was so incredible how fast it started moving. Mm. But I picked out 1964, the first concept of a mouse and a graphical user interface, and also hypertext. Pause, Adam, what's hypertext? Come on, what's hypertext? It's like a hyperlink.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Sorry.
It's created by Doug Engelbert.
Yep.
10 years later, Xerox PARC developed the Alto machine, which was later stolen by Microsoft and Apple.
Do we need to say allegedly?
Allegedly.
just
for the lawyers.
That was just from the source data we have discovered.
But then Gordon Moore and Robert Noyce created the company Intel. Adam, Intel was formed in 1964.
Wow.
Primarily to create and build an integrated circuit. After forming the company, it only takes them a year to come up with Moore's Law. And I put down there, Moore's Law is the observation that the number of transistors in an integrated circuit doubles every 2 years.
Yes, so I was going to say, obviously it moved on quickly after
1964,
that.
1964, though, mate. I wasn't even born.
Sure. No, I'm only kidding. Mate, I love that.
Right, now
the Moore's Law thing, though, that impacts all of us. So if we think 100%. About smartphone technology.
Yeah.
What they and people might go, they're the same size. Yeah, they are, but they can do two. Oh, well, yours is actually double because yes, it's a flip phone. He loves his flip phone.
My flip phone.
But for example, that wouldn't have been able to happen 10 years ago.
God no, we're still on. They're
probably working on it, but
yeah,
not. Well, it would have cost double the amount of cash or whatever. So it's about balancing the cost and technology, and it comes down to Moore's Law doubling. It was number of transistors, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So doubling what they can do, basically.
Right, I'm going to let you read out number seven, 1972.
1972, the USA. The video game market and games, typically, everyone dates this as 1948 with a checkers game built by IBM. However, it wasn't until Nolan Bushnell created Atari and the success of Pong that took the world by storm.
Oh, I remember Pong.
Bing, bong. Yeah, the bars just going up and down.
But until then, again, the industry, the revolution, computers, it was all like massive businesses. And then this guy created Atari. And, you know, bless my mum and dad, they bought me the very first, remember the wooden one?
Did you have it?
I had it, the wooden one with the two little switches, you know, and the brilliant stuff like that. But that brought computing into the home.
Yeah.
You know, that to me was incredible in terms of where we then started. And again, if you think about what I'm doing here, Adam, 1972, the last one is 1989 that I want to touch on because it leads us all the way back to Howard's technology. But please, 1972, okay, is when the games industry like took off.
Yeah, actually.
Physically
happened.
Off.
Yeah, yeah.
The next one that I've got is in 1989 about the World Wide Web, which is created by Sir Tim Berners-Lee at the CERN Physics Laboratory. The paper was originally published in 89, built in 1990, and the product was launched in 1991. But what I'm getting at, mate, is in 1972 up until 1989, you cast your mind back. How quick did Moore's Law? What happened in that year was incredible. Absolutely incredible in terms of what then came out. The BBC Micro.
Yeah, I was just thinking of all this. I was trying to remember what my dad had a computer. And it was just like a keyboard that With the box on the back plugged into the TV. I don't even know what it was.
That was, you know, again, it could either been the IBM, it could be the
Again,
Spectrum.
I hope to find that in a loft somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. It could have been the Dragon 64, the Commodore 32, it could have been the Archimedes.
Yeah, I mean, it just exploded, didn't it? There were so many devices that then started, say devices, they were huge, but huge devices that were coming out. And, I mean, you know, Stranger Things. The TV series sort of analyzes this sort of period.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of get a flavor of the games. Arcades.
Arcades
started popping up, didn't they?
They did. And then you had the little tiny ones at home where you'd have the little ping pongs and the Space Invaders and things like that. But what I'm getting at, mate, is if we take time to... We always talk, and we're on episode 33, we're doing podcasts, this is getting streamed through Spotify and other platforms. None of this would be possible. However, only until 1989 was the internet actually invented.
It's insane.
But I keep going back to, and your face when you saw that picture was the same face as mine. In 1642, a guy physically built with no electricity, just with iron and cogs and things, and he created the first adding machine.
I think that's incredible.
At the end of this, mate, I literally stepped back and I went, wow.
We've got it quite easy.
You know what I mean? You wake up, I talk to Alexa, my phone wakes me and all this stuff
like
that.
Yeah, 100%.
So we
will upload this episode to podcasters on Spotify. That's what we use. Yeah. I happily share that with people.
Yeah.
And that handles the distribution of the podcast across the internet.
We then
upload it to YouTube.
Yeah, no. So one of the things that I'm going to do, one of the things that I'm going to do after this, one of the lovely topics that I thought of, imagine me coming in with a blank piece of paper, Adam.
Yep.
The title is episode, let's say it's episode 46, where will businesses be in 50 years' time?
Ooh, yeah, that's going to be a good one.
I mean, wow, I don't even want to talk about it because already my mind's going,
we need AI. To shout, you need to serve
ooh,
that.
Ooh, ooh,
ooh, AI.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, and then you get to, like you say, the World Wide Web being created in 1989, but that didn't really hit scale. Like, it started to be used and people started doing stuff, but in the home...
No, goodness me, yeah, dial-up modems.
When did you get access to the net?
When I was working at Silic Mouldings, we actually installed the first modem to download the bank data automatically.
Wow.
That was added to one of my list of things.
So what year would that be?
80-something, sorry. It would have been, no, obviously 1991, maybe 1993, 94?
Yeah, and then home internet, we probably had it 97?
98.
97, 98. Because then, obviously, there's one thing businesses having it. The next thing was actually becoming home.
Absolutely.
And then Amazon appears.
Oh, gosh.
Selling books.
Yeah.
My dad used to buy books off Amazon. And I remember thinking the idea of buying... It sounds really weird to say it aloud, and I hear how it sounds, but back in the day, it was like, hang on, you're going to buy a book off the internet.
Yes.
How does that even work? Yes. How do you get it out of the computer? That was like the thinking. How do you get it out of the computer? It's like, no, they send it to you in the post. Oh, right.
Oh.
But to say that, we just take it so for granted now, that there was no purchasing going on the internet, right?
No.
Everything was done in the first bit, how we talked about, you know, how technology transformed business. So when you were buying a book online, it was like, what?
Yeah.
Sort of thing. What even is that? Was like so odd. Now think about it. The other side that then takes me is mum and dad were quite forward thinking in terms of, my mum was like, you can buy your food from Iceland.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which year this was. It'd probably be late 90s, though, in fairness. You can buy your food from Iceland. And I remember me and mum going on to the Iceland online. I think they were one of the first online shops.
Ooh,
if I might be wrong. But and we were like, what? So we went on and you could browse all the products and add it to your shopping basket. And the young people listening, you probably think I sound absolutely nuts. But believe me, when it was the first time and the only way you'd been able to get your supermarket shopping was physically go to the supermarket, put it in the car, do this and that. We use internet shopping all the time for our groceries.
I do. Me and Michelle. It's very rare that we actually go.
It's actually, for me personally, it's a time saver.
Oh, yeah.
Because we can add the previous basket and then tweak it. We can look at our minimum stock levels. We don't have it logged.
You can look at your trends.
Yeah,
you can look at this. I know nowadays, Michelle buys the printer ink for our machine at home from Amazon. We occasionally get emails from Amazon going, you're running out of black ink. Because the printer is talking to the internet that talks to Amazon to say it's running low. And therefore it's telling us you need to order some more black
ink. Nick from Modeshift down the corridor, we had on a while ago, he was going, my printer keeps emailing me. He's telling me. It's like, I know
it's running out of ink.
Yeah, I just think, you know, the bit, I think we should also probably do an episode on the 90s. Because that changed the game.
Everywhere,
immediately, so much quickly. And then really the noughties was just an accelerated version of that.
Yeah.
Like I said, you set up Resilient before YouTube was around.
Yeah.
You know, that all then happened. But, you know, HubSpot Media was technically started before TikTok existed. Musical.ly was the original platform that TikTok was.
Absolutely, as you said.
So, you know, and that just started to exist sort of thing. And then it sort of disappeared, started to fade, and then it rebranded and away it went. So, yeah, I think we need to do an episode on probably 90s technology. Game Boy.
Well, I hope you enjoyed your little trip down memory lane triggering some nice thoughts.
I mean,
I don't
personally remember 1642.
No, but you were saying I loved your face when you were like, oh, my God, I remember being in the pub. And it was genuinely good memories, I think.
Yeah, it is. No, it is. It's funny thinking about all of the, you know, like the click-clack machine.
Yeah, knuckle-busters.
Yeah, the knuckle-busters and what you had to do. And hopefully it's taken a few people back to what it was. And I think in some regard it's quite nice to be. I just shot film on holiday. I'm looking at a couple of old film cameras behind you that I've got on the shelf. And it was good to disconnect, actually. And I think talking about the future, the concern is, what is the impact on us? Yes. What's the impact on our mental health? Where do we need to draw the line? Because whilst we're doing this with cameras and technology, we're having a very real discussion. Yes. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
It's not through a video recording service. It's very much in the flesh and talking, albeit we then put it on social media and this, that and the other. But, you know, I think there's a key challenge, just my personal opinion, key challenge we face in society is how do we balance, especially with social media. And I run a social media company, you know, I'm not saying that, but how do we balance it for our mental health? How do we, you know, make sure that people are maintaining their wellness in terms of mental space and this, that, the other, and not just living your life through your devices, you know.
And taking to heart what people say because they're a faceless warrior behind the keyboard.
And I do look a little bit like the guy at the Chipmunks, which is what I got told on TikTok. Yeah,
but so, you don't take it to heart, though.
No, so I think there's a huge challenge moving forward as you know, Moore's Law continues to happen. We've both got smartwatches on, for example.
Exactly.
I could answer a phone on there.
I can.
I was like, I feel like, and I'm old enough to go, I feel like I'm in a spy movie, hello. You know, but they would have had things like that in James Bond movies back in the 90s, albeit I can't shoot poison darts out my watch.
I can watch.
Can you? No, I'm all right. So, yeah.
But that's interesting. That might be another episode about, you know, I do have a few friends that have been, unfortunately, on the receiving end of some very, very bad social trolling. And they went into a very bad place for a couple of
weeks. Yeah, I think we need to make sure that we're looking after our wellness while we're doing
100%,
it.
You know, and difficult. But
so,
enjoyed your trip.
I loved that trip.
Good.
We've got a busy week next week, Mr.
No,
Reed.
We haven't.
Yeah, we have.
Yes, we have.
We've got, and when I say busy, we're talking podcast busy.
Oh, wow.
So,
how many?
A couple of things. Well, we're recording one on Monday, and that's because we need a rebooking.
Yeah.
That's fine. We're recording two on Wednesday. So we're going with Darlington Business Club to their networking event, and it's taking place at the Great North Air Ambulance offices. Yeah. So we are really excited to go there, and we've been invited to take the pod gear.
Yes.
And go down. So we're going to feature the Great North Air Ambulance team.
Yeah.
In an episode, and then we're going to do an episode straight after, which we'll put out separately, which is going to be like a speed networking type thing where me and Andy are doing the podcast, and we're going to invite people from the business club to come and say hello and maybe just tell us what they're all about.
10 minutes, what they're about. Yep. And hopefully we will get people that book a proper session with us to say, actually, can I come on for the good hour?
Yeah. So we'll do that. So, and we've potentially got another one in the offing next week as well.
As subject Tuesday, to booking. So I think I'm going to be podcasted out by Wednesday.
Yeah. Full of chatter. We'll have plenty to talk about. But yeah, so we've got some really exciting episodes coming up. I'm really looking forward to hearing all about Great North Ambulance. I've raised money for them in the past.
You cycled from Land's End to John O'Groats.
That's it, that way around. Yeah.
You see, I do listen to you.
You do. It turns
George,
out it does.
What have you been in this?
So yeah, so we've got some great episodes coming up.
Yes,
we have. And I'm really excited to share those with you. As always, if you want to give us a date that you thought technology was great, please let us know in the comments. And what are you doing this weekend? The final question. Oh, he's foot tapping. What's that about? Are you all right?
I'm really, I know I keep saying it, but I'm really into my programming at the moment.
This, I know you're into your programming. I did do the server stuff last weekend, actually.
Did you really? How did that go?
Yeah, it went all right. I have TrueNAS installed on that computer that I pinched off you. I haven't given it a name yet because I'm still working on it. What I did was I whipped the drives out of my existing NAS and plugged it in there.
Right.
And I was like, it's reading, but I actually want to, I couldn't get it to do another pool thing. So I backed it all up onto my computer, back in the NAS. And now I just need to go bite the bullet and potentially have to wipe the disks to read.
That's how you learn though, isn't it?
Yep, that I've been learning. I also spun up a virtual machine on it as well. Yeah. Geeking out. Right, this weekend.
Yeah.
Charity rugby game at the rugby club tonight.
Nice.
So I'm going to go and take some photographs for them guys.
Lovely.
And then tomorrow I have the semi-final of the County Cup. Yeah, for the Mighty Twos.
And
the Mighty Under Nines are playing as well.
Oh,
tomorrow,
the Mighty, so.
Mighty Under Nines. And the Mighty Under Eights.
Right,
and Sevens.
Gosh,
all of them.
So it's a busy rugby weekend.
Yeah, busy rugby weekend.
Yeah, all day programming on Saturday because I'm really enjoying it. Really, really enjoying it. And then chill out on Sunday.
Yep.
Just relaxing. Dad over for dinner. Watch a few movies.
Lovely.
Bit of Diablo 4.
Do you know what? I saw it, yeah. I did Diablo 2 when I was...
Diablo 4 is good.
Is it?
Oh, really good. Some lovely friends of mine, Darren and Charlotte. We've formed a clan. We go out.
Mm.
Oh, it's really good. Again, you know what you were saying about the games? It's the interaction.
Social. Yeah, yeah.
It's really nice.
I am doing the same with my friends' unit. I do play games and a couple of times a week.
You still doing that?
Helldivers too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are
Dan's playing that a lot at the moment.
We are liberating. it's basically a game of Starship Troopers is essentially the thing. So yeah, it's quite funny, good fun. And actually, like you say, social with friends. And I'm playing with mates all over the place. So it's great.
Really nice.
So yeah.
Good stuff.
Until
next time.
Well, technically Monday for us, but until the next episode.
Nobody knows that.
Yeah.
So same bat time, same pod time, same pod channel.
Same. Batman.
People, how are you related? What the heck's he doing about?
That was the old Batman music,
wasn't it? Adam West.
Yep. God, that is a throwback, isn't it?
It is.
And on that note.
Goodbye, buddy. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.